This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. You can subscribe to the app on Apple and Android. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
Sarah Hugh and Doc 2 on FUBAR Radio.
All right, that time of the week again. Yay. It's, yeah, we're all here. The three of us again as well.
Or two and a half.
Sarah, Hugh, and Doc all back in the studio. I know. Doc Brown, this is quite interesting. Apart from the fact that you are early today, you're 45 seconds before we started.
Thank you very much.
Which is, but
thank
also,
it's a record.
Your voice. What's going on, mate? What's happened?
I've come from the dentist. I had the root canal surgery and I lost a tooth.
And right now you're rocking the jewellery.
Yeah, I can never tell if I'm drooling or not. It's like I can't feel the right side of my face.
Oh man!
So I'm guessing
literally you can't feel it at all. Can I come over and like flick it?
Yeah, you could flick like anything around here. I'm not going to feel that shit.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah.
Sarah, you're sitting next to him. Can we try and test it?
Pretty weird.
Try and test it. Sarah's sitting next to him.
Oh, no, I don't want to hurt you.
You can't feel it.
It's a nice excuse.
Just give him a little slap. Just a little cheeky slap.
No, I'm just stroking Doc's face.
That's so strange because I can see what you're doing and I can't. I can feel that. That's nice.
It's reminding me.
Just a little lower.
Okay. Yeah. His tail started wagging when you did that. That was cute.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling. You want to see? Look, there's no the tooth gone there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
Oh, they like fully did the whole shebang. Are they not? That's why I've got the ill gold tooth. And I was like, I'm actually really happy to have a gold tooth. I want more gold teeth.
I've got two gold teeth, but this one, you can't, where it is, you can't bridge the gap between the two teeth. So to get a new tooth,
okay,
I'd have to take out the two teeth on either side and put in a bridge of three fake ones.
Oh, gosh. Well, what about an implant? Those cost like $2,000
or something. The implant's three and a half G's.
Damn.
I got a quote
that's
today.
That's a snip.
I thought the NHS covers all that, doesn't it? No.
Nah, man.
Only for certain peeps.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
But I think the message is brush your teeth twice
brush
a day
teeth,
and
kids.
Don't eat sweets or drink fizzy drinks.
Yeah.
I guess this means Doc can't rap about anything today.
No,
I
Doc can rap, mumble I, about I can, anything
I
you
can
like.
Genuinely, I can theoretically rap about anything. But today I can't articulate. I can't spit that fast.
Yeah.
So I would maybe do something real slow where it's just like, hey, yeah.
Yep.
You wanna go again?
Maybe
a
just
jazz.
Go more like the P. Diddy sort of style, P. Diddy approach to things. Yeah.
Just real, real
slow.
Or you
can write the raps and I'll spit them like P. Diddy.
And then I've got to take you through the flow and I can't even flow.
You don't have to worry
to
if
speed.
I write rhymes, I write checks.
I write checks for teeth implants. Hey, Diddy's in trouble, man. I mean, well, he is and he isn't because he's got enough money to fight pretty much any case. He beat a murder rap, attempted murder rap that he was clearly guilty of. I mean, so I hear.
Diddy?
10 years ago. Yeah.
You mean, are you confusing Suge or Diddy?
No, Diddy. Don't you? You're
oh,
telling
I
me you forgot
so,
about
no,
that?
No, no, no. I thought you were meaning
when he ran
about
up in Club
this
New York.
Recently. Yeah, no, but I thought you were talking about the.
He had the money.
His thing with his son's
football
coach recently.
Well, I am.
I am.
I'm just saying, like, he got off a much worse charge.
Yeah.
Then the charge they're throwing at him now is bullshit. Let's be real.
Like, he doesn't give a damn about that.
He had an argument with everybody.
That for
can
breakfast.
See.
Yeah, exactly.
As soon as you hear the story, you can see what it's really about. Do you know what I'm saying? It's an angry dad going overboard, shoving the dude. But in America, you can't shove a dude.
No.
And you can't say shit.
Well, let's get so
you know what? Have you heard what one of the charges is?
No.
One of the charges is a terrorism charge.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's is it because he's black?
And it's blatantly because he said.
It's blatantly because he's black, though, fam.
It's blatantly because he said to the dude, like, I will bomb your ass. He probably says some shit like that.
Yeah.
I will come back here, I'll blow all this shit up.
Yeah. But then
because
you
when you're in a rage, you say some shit like that.
But this is the beauty of being hip hop, is then that his legal team can say, but yes, he's a hip hop dude.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is hip hop terminology,
so.
Which really means
so.
He's going to kill you with kindness.
He's going to come back and drop Hot 16.
Exhibit A, the bomb squad. The bomb squad from Public Enemy weren't actually bombing anybody, but it sounded cool to have bomb in the title. That's that's going to be exhibit A.
That almost sounds like it could be a contender for No They Didn't, which hopefully we'll really have coming up later in the show. We've got a few No They Didn't possibilities, but yeah.
When did you fly off the handle?
Yeah,
completely uncontrollably, because that's what he's done, man. Yeah. And let's be really, really real. Diddy is possibly the least threatening person in rap since like Jurassic 5.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if Jurassic
5.
If all five of Jurassic 5 say, yo, we're going to fuck you up. Yeah. Even if Charlie Tuna came in and, yo, I'm going to fuck you up in the deep voice, I'd be like,
You know, it's going to be West Side Story.
Not so much.
Diddy doesn't have an aggressive voice to even call upon.
Yeah.
Still, one of my favorite Diddy moments, again, is the Dave Chappelle when he's taking the biz out of making the band.
Oh, yeah, it's very funny.
And he's like, I need 2 liters of yak's milk in the next hour.
Shout out, Chappelle. I'm going to see that dude tomorrow, man.
Oh, I wanted to go to that show so much, I just was so disorganized.
Hey, what are we going to do about rap about anything? Do you want to try writing something?
Oh, no, I mean, we could take some subjects. Maybe I should just rap about, like, rapping with a stroke.
What are you reckon, Sarah? Are you up for it, Sarah? Do you want to do it?
Half your face walking.
Spitting pre-written lines and faking the funk like Diddy. Yeah. Of course.
Excellent. All right. Well, definitely tweet us in with some suggestions for rap about anything.
I can write about anything. Write about anything.
Sarah, I'm down for this. It's going to be good. You can tweet us.
I think this might be
radio.
The best rap about anything ever.
And get
even
touch.
Better than rapping over the Really Wild Show theme tune.
No, nothing's going to top that. That was an amazing
moment.
That
was pretty damn funky.
If you want to get in touch with us as well, you can email anytime. TuesdayDriveFubarRadio.com. We will have a rap about anything coming up later in the show. Also, Taking the Piss. It's going to be back to you. Do you know what? I got like four. I got four taking the pieces this
You're
week.
You're getting more and more British each day.
I am. I really, really am. Yeah. Absolutely. Also,
I don't know if that Cotney dude's going to show up or not. This
really?
Week. Oh, yeah,
really?
I hope he will.
I heard he was actually having something done to his teeth.
I think
too.
He had a similar kind of surgery to mine.
Coincidence? No, not
Who
a coincidence.
Knows? Who knows? There's a spooky world out there.
I'm also legendary UK producer Lewis Parker is going to be joining us as well just after 5 p.m. as well. And also not
I'm
too far away.
I'm such a fan. It's ridiculous.
I know. Really I love Lewis. Yeah. Like, he is really honestly excited. Like one of the G's, and like original G's
also,
for this country.
I don't know if I've ever met him.
Oh, I don't think I've ever met him.
Yeah, we always move in different circles.
Not today,
I'm so
friend.
Happy Lewis
Not
is
going
to be here today.
Yes, very
to all the fans out there, you know, Lewis has been living out in the States for a while, so finally the UK world anyway, is going to get to hear from the man himself, so keep it locked.
Amazing. That is exciting.
Also, today obviously been a very, very important day for the UK and the world as well, being 10 years since the 7/7 bombings here in London, so we've got a little montage, and I hit the streets again today to chat to a few people about how they feel about that as well. But up next, we've got No They Didn't. Doc, what has been...
Well, before No They Didn't, we have to include our weekly feature of big ups. Because I think there's so many people doing cool stuff. You know, there's so much to be a Debbie Downer about in the world, isn't there? It's quite easy to be negative. But I'm on the side of let's choose the glass half full. Mm. And so each week I like us to take the opportunity here at FUBAR Radio to send out a big up. I think last week did we big up Tony Benn or something? We've bigged up so many cool people. No, it was America.
Oh, yeah, you bigged up America,
which was a bit of a shock.
They got a big up
for legalising gay marriage, which I really thought deserved like a big up for sure. And this week's big up for me has to go to the Greek people. Because basically the Greek people
they brought so much to the table.
In it.
Once you finish your food, smash the plate, you're a hero. Right. I love those guys.
Let's get into that
Bazooki,
up next.
Everything.
Get into that up next. Bigging up Greece. You're on FUBAR, Sarah Hugh and Doc 2. Gonna start you off here with some Kendrick. Kendrick featuring Dre Compton. You're on FUBAR, Sarah Hugh and Doc 2. The three of us all back together. Isn't that pleasant?
There are places that are a bit like Compton.
Yep.
Clapham Common.
Like where, sorry?
Compton.
Clapham Common? What the fuck are you talking about?
Clapham Common,
that's the kind of place where Hugh, what's his name, you know, Notting Hill dude hangs out.
That's what Clapham Common's about.
Hugh Grant and Gwyneth Paltrow and people like that. That's what Clapham Common's about.
That just shows you how much Doc's turned into fucking Hollywood these days. He's like, shit, Clapham Common is the ghetto.
It's a play on words. You take out the T. You put in
grammatical terms. You see, it's the mind of a rapper.
Clap 'em, bang, bang.
Yeah,
fuck you guys,
the mind
man.
Of a rapper.
Sure. You're not
sure. Mind of a gangster rapper.
Sure, good cover up, Hollywood. Good cover up.
You know what? The sedatives are still.
Is this really fun?
Still making their, I feel this way into my.
I'm going to be able to take advantage of you.
I know.
It's very possible. I mean,
Sarah Love. Sarah, what?
How do you think she got that second name?
No. I just can't wait.
Sarah will love you, whether you like it or not.
Don't call me love for nothing.
She'll crash into your car so your cars can kiss.
It's Dalai Lama's 80th birthday. I'm following his preachings of love. You know, spread the love.
Yeah,
so I'm really looking forward to that lap dance coming up shortly. No, they didn't.
Yeah, I can do it.
In this drunken, this stupor that you're in right now.
They told me not to do anything like too overly energetic because like there's like a gaping wound in my gum.
Okay. Well, you can get more creative. You don't have to do the twerking today. I do like the twerking, but you can you can get more creative.
It's just going
to
be real smooth, like fluid movements.
Okay, I'm down. I'm excited.
As I work my way down under the dashiki.
You're going to be like, yeah, like a real drugged out stripper, aren't you? He's just like given up a long, long time ago. Yeah.
Lap dancing.
Oh, it's going to be ugly. I mean, we might have to film this one, I reckon.
I think we do. I think we will.
So, Grace, we're bigging up Grace this week.
Big ups.
Yeah, who are we bigging up?
Yes.
Bigging up Grace.
No, big ups. I think, you know, there's so many cool things happening in the world that need more attention brought to them. And, you know, in all kinds of spheres, whether that's music, the celeb world, which I'm so crazy about, not, and politics. But in the world of politics, I think Greece, in this last week, they've done an amazing thing. You've had the Greek Prime Minister, Tsipras, who he said, right, I'm going to put the decision to the Greek people whether or not they want to go along with Europe's suggestion of how we're solving our debt crisis or not. And Greek people came out and they voted and said no to austerity, which is... shows me that anything is possible, because they're basically saying we're not going to be bullied into our solution to debt being more loans and more debt. Which only makes sense. Yeah. Like, what kind
and
of crazy
like
person
an infant,
are you?
Becoming like infantilized by the established Western European giants,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And it's like this solution in the first instance, they should never have been loaned that money in the first instance. So how are they possibly thinking, anyone in Europe thinking that is going to help solve things now? And I just think it shows the world that anything is possible. We can say no to ridiculous demands that are put on us by politicians. And, you know, it might lead to a domino effect across Europe. You're seeing like crazy debt situations in Portugal, in Spain. I mean, we had 250,000 people marching through London the other week saying no to austerity as well, which is having a massive impact on the NHS, on welfare, on disabled people, all these kinds of things. So I just think big up to Greece for having some balls and saying no, because either way they're screwed whether they do or whether they don't, you know what I'm saying? This is no easy ticket out for them, but I just think the gesture says so much for us as a people
I'm glad they did it. And you know, we got to do more of it, because at the end of the day, like you said, a quarter of a million people got out on the streets here, but unfortunately, like a month before that, we voted for the government that we have now, who don't give a shit if we're out in the streets or not.
Exactly. But then when you even break down the last election here, it's still not the majority of people. Out of everyone who voted in the UK, 24% of people voted for
the Tory.
Yeah,
it's a tiny, tiny minority, you know?
And then...
And these are the people who are in power, and they boast about it like we all voted for them.
Exactly.
You know?
And
it drives me up the wall.
And again, they try to suggest as though, like, how we're going to fix our crisis in this country is by making disabled people pay for that, making carers pay for that, making teachers pay for that.
Or the BBC.
When they're the ones who created debt by sending us off to build nuclear weapons and monsters.
You're gonna take £665 million out of the BBC.
Disgraceful.
Hey, do you know what I do for a living, Cameron? I'm trying to fucking be an actor out here, man. I'm trying to get like a decent wage.
Exactly.
And you're taking £665 million out of a company that paid me peanuts in the first place.
It's
what am I gonna get now if I don't get peanuts? You know what I'm gonna get, Hugh?
What?
The corn nuts. You know, the corn ones.
Even that. If
that's
you're
the
lucky.
Only thing that's cheaper than the peanut.
Yeah.
Is the
zero
corn nut.
Nutritional value whatsoever. I mean, the Tories have always.
To be fair,
been...
with a lot of roasting and salt, they are tasty.
Basically,
but that's not,
have
that's,
a spoon of salt.
That's besides
with
the point.
Corn nut on
do you know what I'm saying?
But no,
I worked
hard
for my peanut.
Think about dog.
I was almost chili coated, and now I'm back to corn nuts.
I mean, it's definitely going to be tough though in Greece. Like, even the sanctions with the banks, where you can only withdraw €60 a day.
if for you're lucky,
person,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like for real, they got a limit on what you can...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because basically you had something, it was like a few £1 billion got withdrawn from banks in one day, because everyone's like in a panic. Where
so
they
the
think
people
that
lose
banks
savings.
Are
the people lose savings.
Yeah, absolutely. And like what you've got happening in Greece at the moment, because there's 50% of young people are unemployed. So you've got households where you've got like three generations in one household living off of a pension. Mm. You know, there's no work, there's no incomes, the banks are on the verge of collapsing. So people are going into a panic saying, we need to withdraw all of our funds. And then this is what's leading to having like $3 billion taken out of the bank in one day.
And meanwhile, the feta cheese guy is just there like, get the fuck away from my house. Yeah. Get away from my house, man.
House.
I got my shit. It's working for me.
House.
Fuck you lot.
He's
just like throwing out punches left, right and center.
I need to be shipping this out to Green Lane, so don't step off. But I just think big up to Greece, man, because it's a brave step. But I just think it just shows we shouldn't feel that we need to just be bullied by whatever the government is trying to dictate to us. You know, if it don't make sense,
We got that weird kind of apathy here. Like, I love being British, don't get me wrong. I think we're amazing. Mm-hmm. I think we're like culturally we're more liberal than most places in the world. And we're forward thinking and artistically we're right up there. But I just think when it comes to the real fuckeries that are out there, we're disturbingly apathetic. Do you know what I'm saying? Like
when you say real fuckeries, what do you mean? Like what are you?
I mean, like
to?
The little things they slip under the radar every day, like
disgraceful.
Austerity is one example, and like I know you say, like 250,000 went out there in March, and that's true. You know, we all saw it on the news. But like in France, if you like cut like student loans a little bit, like motherfuckers are like beating up policemen.
Well, they had the revolution.
You know what I'm saying?
They took their heads of state and guillotined them people up, you know what I mean? So it's like that's kind of
so,
part of their
like,
rebellious nature.
I just think
French,
like it should start with respecting democracy a little bit more. Let's like be proud of democracy and show that by voting. You know, even if you don't believe in all the parties, set up your own party and get people to vote for that. Do something. Do you know what I'm saying? But don't start like moaning in an apathetic nature where you're not really physically doing anything about it after you didn't even vote in the first place.
But then,
you know,
unfortunately, you weren't here the week when we played the clip from Tony Benn, which he is just such a... I love that guy so much. And he was saying, you know, the way you control people is through fear and making them feel demoralized. Mm. When you have a nation of people who feel demoralized, there's no hope. They don't
100%.
Vote. And because they think, what's the point of this? But in actual fact, if the working classes have people who they truly, they went out and voted who they thought represented their views, you know what I mean? Then we can actually institute change, because it takes the power away from the marketplace and puts it in the ballot box.
Yeah.
And that's what Greece have done. And even just like the Greek party Syriza, that's what they're called, like that, you know, they never wear ties. They're making like a lot of statements to show that we are completely against like this institutionalized way of operating. And I just hope that this becomes a domino effect. Times are changing.
They are. Oh, you know what, my MP where I live is a dude called Jeremy Corbyn.
I love him.
He's running to be the leader of the Labour Party.
I love him. He's never going to succeed.
I almost want to like get a little meet, because I met him a few times. He's
I
a cool
get him
guy
on the
like
show.
He come around my house. You know what I'm saying?
I know
he's
his
a cool
brother.
Guy. He come around my house.
I love it how they do that.
He doorstepped my house, and he was a cool guy. Like, I was like, "What's this, Jehovah's Witnesses or something?" And then he broke down his policies.
Like,
I was like, "I fucking like this dude."
Yeah.
And ever since then, I've been following him. I always vote for him. Because, like, I mean, I'm old school Labour, right? But like the new school Labour, I find it impossible to support.
Well, there's no difference between them and the Tories.
Yeah, no difference.
In this big society.
But it's easy for me to vote for my MP, which is a beautiful thing. I think a lot of kids don't understand the election. They think, am I voting for Cameron or am I voting for David Miliband? You're not voting for either of them. You're voting for your local MP.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Who's your local MP? Find out who he is, what he's about, or she. Do you know what I'm saying? And like Corbyn, I was like, this guy's a legend. He's
I
a
love
legend.
It. And
like,
his brother
he backs
is a G
everything
too.
That I'm about.
My dad went
and
to
now
uni
he's
with,
running
with his brother, and his brother has like created this incredible way of like predicting the weather. Yes. No, let's be on the campaign
but, yeah,
to get Jeremy
you,
Corbyn
how
on
do
the
you
show.
Back, how do you back him to be the leader of the Labour Party? Because that's not open to us, is it?
And you know the other thing with all the last four elections that we've had in this country, each person who has won has been supported by Rupert Murdoch and News Corp.
Oh, they've got
so
crazy money behind them.
So basically what that equates to is to succeed in a candidacy running, you need to be backed by the devil kind of thing. And so, a.k.a. Your homeboy, what's his name again? Tony Abbott. No, not Tony Abbott. That's not your homeboy. News Corp man. What's his name? They're the same one in the
Murdoch.
Murdoch. Doc. Yeah, that's yeah. it. Yeah. Two different devils.
Hugh's homeboy.
But yeah, no, no.
Please don't ever say
I
that.
I mean,
again.
As in fucking Australian. No, but so I'm just saying, it's like that's the shame of it is that you need media behind you to boost your campaign, and there's going to be a massive smear campaign against Jeremy Corbyn. That's why
it's already started, man. And before we go any further, I just want to apologise to all our opinionated listeners who are getting angry about Sarah being on the fence every week. We're really sorry for that. We just don't know what she's
about.
We don't know what she's about.
Yeah, I get accused of that all
last
the time.
Last week she rocked up in a dashiki with all her hair in an afro that was so big she couldn't get through the door. She like
with the black power fist.
Yeah, she had a black power fist. She knocked out like 7 white people who hadn't even said hello yet when she came through the door.
They're like, good morning.
And no, we're sick of Sarah not playing her cards.
I know.
I know. What are you about?
It's like take a stand for something and actually, you know, give an opinion on it, Sarah. So what? Yeah. She never does.
Christ's sake. Hugh, what we got?
Hey, so coming up next, here we go. We're going to be chatting about wireless. Now, Sarah, something happened to wireless. It was pretty dangerous.
Oh, man, you know what? I'm so angry about this. But you go first because I'm interested to know.
Let's maybe we should have a tune here and then we'll get into this last week.
Right after Stormzy. This happened. Now, coming up next, wireless, something very, very dangerous app. Did Sarah Love, did you nearly die? You could have, maybe. Find out up next.
Goddamn white people.
Yeah, I'm Fubar.
My name is
Stormzy, know me from, name of that one. Smash this. Sarah, you're a wireless on the weekend. Stormzy, did you get to see?
Yeah, we were playing just before Stormzy, and that's like the second week in. No. Where was the other place? Parklife Festival. Yeah, in Manchester. That's where we also played
for him. Oh, yeah, how did that go? Did Nas do his thing up there?
Yeah, but I had to leave before his damn set, so I got to leave all my friends there,
that's the
and they told
thing
me
about
how amazing
being an entertainer,
it was.
Isn't it?
Do you know what I mean?
You rarely get to see the entertainment.
On a timetable, yeah. And so it was kind of similar at Wireless this week. Well, this last week on Thursday night, supported Mary J. Blige in Manchester, which was incredible. Have you seen Mary J. Blige before?
Not live, no.
She was just awesome. And it was just crazy to be like in an arena, but just her aura just filled that whole room kind
much.
Of thing. It was just like really one of these like pop star shows that are so worth seeing. Mm. And to me, like that is a real pop star. When you look at her whole career story and then, oh my God, the fans, seeing fans waiting for her at the backstage after the show, where they were literally, she came out, and it was like these people were literally like, Mary, I'll kill my unborn child for you, kind of thing. And like they were virtually assaulting her as soon as they got anywhere near her, kind of thing. It was just like, just that level of like fandom was nuts. So they supported her in Manchester on Thursday, then on Friday in Birmingham, and then on Saturday, she was at Wireless as well. And then we went and did the show there to her set. I only caught a little bit of her set. So Kendrick, who we played earlier on the show, his set was nice as well, and it didn't blow me away, but it was good. And then Stormzy is seen pretty damn live. I mean, Sinead Harnett, she performed, that was amazing. Then up after her was Stormzy set. He brought out Dizzy Rascal.
Sinead's great. You know, it's such a beautiful thing now that our artists can create more of a shitstorm, like, than the big American artists. Like, the big American artists, we appreciate them and that. I'm talking specifically here about rap and R&B.
Why do you reckon that is?
I just think the tables turn somehow. It's like, we got a hype going here that we love the fact that Americans don't understand it. And I think for the kids, that immediately speaks to them in a way that UK rap maybe 15, 20 years ago really didn't, because the vast majority of kids didn't know it existed. So when they heard it, they immediately just thought, oh, this is an English dude trying to be like, you know, whoever was the big American rapper at the time. Mm. Whereas now, kids, there's just like, wherever your music's from, it's unimportant to me.
Yeah.
Just, is it a hit or not?
You go, Sarah, you're right.
No, go for it.
No, you're right.
No, well, I think it's like a combination of things too, because definitely like the industry, it's all about numbers for them. So they're now prepared to open their eyes to what is happening here, because they're seeing ways that can be turned into an earner. So certain people we're seeing an opening for certain things to be promoted, whereas in the past, they were like, we're far too focused on this multi-million, numbers, people from the States. We're not actually going to pay you mind, regardless of how big this whole thing is. So really, it's like, I think UK music, particularly UK black music, got cock-blocked for like decades.
For a long time.
You know, decades kind of thing. Literally until the last 10 years, when suddenly it was like, oh,
grime and urban. We can work with urban in this studio and then let's promote that. And, you know, and so I just think there's a combination of things too. Also in the States, it's not like anything really new and exciting is happening in the States. It's just like a, you know, continuation of the same old. And that's why you have so many American artists who are actually excited about what's going on here. And then you have Drake bringing Skepta out on stage and all of this stuff.
When Drake brought Skepta out, that was possibly one of the livest moments of the whole set. With no disrespect to Drake, I fucking love Drake. I know we could disagree about that, but I love him, and it was a great show from what I saw. But when he brought Skepta out, and I don't think he even gave Skepta a beat. I think he just rapped Shutdown a cappella.
Oh no, I think there was a beat, wasn't there? Yeah, but I think also part of like the buzz of
again,
that. Yeah,
I don't know if there was a beat. He just came out and he just rapped, and the whole crowd lost their shit.
But yeah. I think also part of that is the same as with Kanye bringing out dudes a little while ago at the show in London. But it's also kind of like it's the shock value for the UK fans because they're suddenly like, oh my god, this American person has thrown me a crumb.
We're connected,
and so they suddenly start losing their mind that it's like, wow, they're actually paying attention to us.
But I also think we stand alone for the first time. I think, like,
definitely
big up to Dizzy. He was probably our first proper superstar, you know. And I think since his day, like when he broke through, like 03 04, I think we actually stand alone now. Like, I think a Skepta fan is not that fussed that like there's an American artist like backing him up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was at Glastonbury. I went to see Skepta. And I met with him before the gig as well. And I knew straight away that where Glasto had booked him was too small. They booked him a tent that was built for, like, you know, relatively well-known DJs.
Whereas they should well-known Morris dancers.
Yeah, they should have given him, like, a straight-up, like, rock band stage. That like, he should have been on the John Peel or something like that. They'll learn. Because Glasto, what I love about them, Michael Eavis and Emily and them, they're not prejudiced. A lot of the rock and roll fans are mad prejudiced.
But their whole success.
Emily and Michael Eavis, they don't give a shit. They're like, if the kids are into it, we're doing it. Because we're going to give more money to charity.
The only way they stay relevant is keeping their finger on that pulse and making sure they're representing all these different corners. Otherwise, it'll just fizzle out into irrelevancy.
Big up the Eavises.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing, though, that you do have, like, for the localising thing as well. I think people will just feel a massive connection, obviously.
Yeah, you just feel it, man.
I mean, obviously, you know, where hip-hop's origins is why everybody around the world feels that big connection to the States. But when you got things like grime that are kind of, you know, almost a little subculture in itself coming off of that, and then people are like, well, like you said, it's our own thing, you know what I mean? And I think it's fucking smart for people like Drake to pull Skepta up on stage. Like,
For his English audience.
You're saying to a British audience, you're acknowledging that as a big
but
thing.
But that's what,
you know
what I mean. I see it almost as a lot of that is definitely a PR stunt in terms of Kanye. No question.
But I'm going to be 100 with you. If someone from Drake's camp phoned me and said, you know what, I'm sure your songs are really good. I've never fucking heard any of them, but I'm sure they're really good. You seem to have a fan base in London. Drake wants to put someone from your world on stage. Would you be up for it? I'd just go for it.
Yeah,
I'd be bang up for it.
Yeah,
because at the end of the day,
and you pull out that really wild show theme tune.
You'd wrap your ass off. There was a lot of response to that really wild show.
Of course there was, because you killed that foolish song.
It's really interesting that a lot of people said, loads of songs sound like Uptown Funk. And I was like, what's your argument? That there's lots of songs that sound like it. I mean, me and you argued about it quite a bit last week.
Argued?
Yeah, we argued. I think if you listen back, there's definitely an argument going on. About Mark Ronson and whatnot. But when I listen back, the really wild show, it's got elements, but it's not like a carbon copy.
Well, do you know what? Okay. Like, I was actually chatting to.
I just don't believe that Mark was watching an episode.
Even when you hear the
call Bruno Mars and said, "I was, bruv, You know about Terry Nutkin? And Bruno was
fam.
Like, yeah, fam.
What about Chris Patton?
Don't say nothing else. I'm on it.
But I was chatting to Mark Ronson on Friday, and we're talking about the...
Really Wild Show theme tune. No, yeah.
We're talking about Uptown Funk, and he apparently, like, even for the guitar part of that, like, he labored over that so badly that he was like, I couldn't get out of the studio, and then was in a public toilet where he vomited and fainted and da-da-da-da-da. So he's, like, spending days and days
because
and days.
Because of what, though?
The guitar part. Just the guitar part on that song, on Uptown Funk.
Oh, it was so bad it made him vomit.
Apparently, yeah.
Oh, really?
And pass out. God. Faint and all shit like that.
It's not a good prognosis.
And it was harder because we'd just been talking about Uptown Funk during the week. So then when I was there chatting to him about it, I was like, yeah, don't say it.
That was where, really, sorry?
Hey?
That was where?
Oh, the Silver Cliff Awards. Silver Cliff Awards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, on Friday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what happened to Wireless anyway with the... You nearly
Jesus.
Died,
this
Sarah.
Is like, it's like 15 minutes ago we were supposed to start this shit.
What happened?
Talking about, yeah, no, I was performing there on the Saturday and it was funny because as I was getting ready, I got back very late from Birmingham on Friday night, and then I was like, okay, let me get all my stuff together for Wireless tomorrow morning, and then watching clips from Wireless, and then the first clip that I saw was just like the gate being like a shot from inside the festival, but the gate just being pushed and then bum rushed, and like at least 50 people just ran through that thing, and I was just feeling so bad for the security guy because it was just this one poor dude standing there trying to hold the door, then he's like, screw this, I'm not risking my life for this wage.
No, not at all.
So dude just stood back and he's like, after you, go.
Yeah.
And it was like, I don't know how many people broke in, man, but it was just like, there's no way that any festival should be that lax. It felt too crowded inside the festival to me. And then the following day there on Saturday, and I was trying to leave, that was like so difficult because they had to lock down all the exits because again there have been so many security breaches. Yeah. Then the following day on the Sunday there was a Nicki Minaj had missed her flight or something like that and had to be helicoptered in, so she was 2 hours late for her set, and I was like, this has got all the makings of a riot. Basically, you're in Finsbury Park,
and on top of that,
you got a load of Aggie Grime fans.
On top of that, Sarah, it's also got the makings of a situation that the mainstream media will absolutely love. Look what happens when rap tries to do a festival, when rap tries to have a thing. It descends into violence and madness and diva behavior and all the blah, blah, blah. And all these stereotypes are readily backed up with video footage that Middle England will look at and go, oh my God, oh my God. And promoters from outside of rap will look at it and go, ooh. Like, I mean, my promoters are Live Nation, same people who promote Wireless.
Yeah.
And you think they're happy about the shenanigans that went on?
It's
a lot of it is beyond their control, right?
And that's what was crazy because the police were going, it's not our business.
Who knows? Maybe Live Nation next year will think twice about promoting rap.
But this is one of the biggest
promoters in the world.
But this is what
we risk every time. The caveat to that, and there is a caveat before you start getting at me like, oh, you turn Hollywood. Check this out, yeah? I'm a huge football fan, as a lot of people know. Football has been taken away from the people that created it, right? Every single player, almost to a man, apart from Theo Walcott,
is
from a working class background, right?
This is what happens when we sedate Doc.
Every player, apart from Theo Walcott, is from a working class background, yeah? And yet, who is able to go and watch the games? Not working class people, because the money is too much. It costs too much to get into a game. So the real working class fans are just watching it in a pub, or they're watching it at home on illegal streams and whatnot. And the same thing has happened in rap. We got our first proper official, internationally renowned rap, grime, whatever you want to call it, urban music related festival in Finsbury Park. And they priced out the people that made the music, the streets. So the streets are always going to be banging on the flipping fence trying to get in because they couldn't afford I don't know how much it costs. I don't pay for tickets. I told you at the start of this rant, I'm Hollywood. Yeah? But the fact is, you can't separate the essence of whatever the form of entertainment is from the entertainment being showcased, because there'll always be a clash.
This is what happens when we pass ownership of our culture and our communities onto industry.
Don't get me wrong, I think it's partly us to blame as well. Do you know what I'm saying? Because like you say, we should own the world that we created. We should be on top of that shit, and we're not. We farm out.
But I always wonder that with football, like, why do people... Well, first of all, I always think, why the hell is sports on the news? That makes no sense to me. But second of all, how do people feel so passionate about their football teams when it's like... two of the dudes are even from London. They're not even from the ends of the team.
It's very
and
hard
then
to
it's
describe.
Like half of the rest of the people aren't even.
It's very hard to
from
describe.
The UK.
I think the way to put it in a nutshell is that I was born in Kilburn. I was raised in Willesden Green, Kilburn, and Cricklewood.
And then
13 years ago, I moved to Dalston, and I've been in Hackney ever since. And I am a diehard Crystal Palace fan. SE25, where I have no physical connection whatsoever. But that was my dad's team. That's where he grew up. All my mum's family are from around southeast London.
But don't you think that's crazy how
that,
then it just
that
becomes
team was
that name
to me.
Rather than anything? Because I can understand back like in the day when it was like your local boys going out there and they brought that cup home. And I knew that kid because he grew up around the corner from here. Like, I can understand being excited like that about
a
team.
It's a religion, man. It's like our form of a religion. Mm. You chat to a Christian. When did you meet Jesus? How come you're so passionate about this dude? You don't even know if he was real or not. Yeah, but I've read this. So this was passed down to me. It's like an oral history that gets passed down, and it becomes irrelevant who plays for the team as long as they play for the team with passion. So it's the essence that you're fighting for in the same way as a religion.
Analogy that you're making. What religion is God?
What religion is God?
Yeah, because I always wonder, like, you know, speaking to, like, how do you know God's a Catholic?
He's a snake handler. I believe
God
in,
is
I believe
a
B-boy. Like.
God is a B-boy. God is KRS-One.
No, I'll be real with you. On a slight religious aside, I do believe that Jesus existed, by the way, before you start giving
me
creed.
I think there's a difference between the
you
real
know what I think about Jesus?
Whether or not
I think
he walked
Jesus,
on water.
I think Jesus was a G. Like, I think Jesus was like the most confident, most lucid,
politician,
smartest dude in town, yeah? And he knew what was going on, and he felt for people. He was a lefty. Do you know what I'm saying? He respected the poor.
He didn't
respected
have anything
people.
Bad to say
he
about gay have, people.
Yeah, he was a don.
Yeah.
But he was such a don in a time of people who didn't have that much imagination.
And really,
that he became a deity over time.
But we're all the child of God. So whether, you know, I think to give him a title of, like, I agree with you, he most probably was a real person. This is part of our oral history.
He weren't white, though. He weren't white. I'll be real with you.
You see what happens when we take our culture and history and give
possible.
It over
he
to the man.
It was mixed race. No, we got to meet in the middle.
I did
on
the geography. I did the read the geography in the Bible, and like, he weren't white. It couldn't have been
exactly,
white.
Exactly.
All right. We've gone from festivals.
Maybe
we've
had
gone from festivals to football to God.
Even still.
Coming up next. Coming up. Wow.
Sorry.
Are we still doing No, They Didn't? Are we doing that? Doc, is this something you wanted to.
I think the No, They Didn't is kind of like, you know. How did the wireless thing occur?
That's their fault for letting the people bum rush the show.
But
like, they should have been
who
more,
the security?
No. The Live organizers, Nation? Like, they should have been on it to make because like. And then when the people backstage were showing me where that footage came from, that was right next to the backstage artist area. So you've got Mary J. Blige, where the night before I see her, fans were so crazed to see her, where they were like, "I will kill to see you, to
and
touch you."
R&B.
And that's R&B, baby. No more drama. You know, so it's like, imagine you're Mary J. Blige sat next door and then you've got 100 rowdy kids, like, literally 10 feet away, bum rushing the show.
That's
like, that's just dangerous.
Yeah.
Dangerous kind of thing. So really, it's their responsibility. And that's also what the police said, that to make sure that their that whole area was contained and secure. So I think, how the hell did wireless ensure everybody's safety there? Because then also, how many more people were in the festival that shouldn't have even been there? That wasn't a safe environment to be in. I'm sorry.
So to be honest, Hugh, I don't really know what the No, They Didn't question is for our listeners.
We've covered
week.
All angles of possibilities. As we digress, the alias of the show, named by my sister weeks
ago. Perhaps
ago.
The question is what musical form could make you kick down a fence?
River dance.
Yeah.
Well, that would
you're kicking down some serious fences with that footwork.
Even if you're not aggressive about the music of Riverdance, once you're doing it, if a fence is close enough to you when you start doing them kicks and shit, you just kick down the fence.
I'm just
going to
do Michael this Flatley. If you get in the way, it's your own fault.
Exactly.
Michael Flatley, the most feared man in the industry.
Yeah,
much more feared than Diddy.
Right, Flatley will fuck you up, man.
All right. Well,
just your shins.
Yeah.
He will fuck your shins up.
We'll throw it out there on Twitter anyway. Hit us up at FUBAR Radio. What music would make you storm down a gate? And we'll get some of your feedback.
Or artists in particular. Yeah.
Absolutely. What event? Even.
Or freeness.
Yeah, or
what would make you storm?
Or family member.
Being in jail. That would make me kick down the fence. Coming up next, why don't we get into the... we've got a bit of a montage put together of the 7/7 bombings, which was 10 years ago today. And
jeez.
Of course, everybody had their 1 minute silence at 11:30 this morning as well. Actually, I went out and chatted to some people on the street too as well, just asked them how they feel about it and if it's changed their way of life in London. So we'll get up to that shortly. FUBAR, he's Redman, Sarah Hugh, and Doc 2 with you. Redman, tonight. You're on FUBAR, Sarah Hugh, and Doc 2. We've got a legendary UK producer Lewis Parker is going to be joining us not too far away, about half an hour. He should be in the studio. Might be a little bit late, I think. There's train problems or something like that. But anyway, not too far away. And also, are you taking a piss? Very, very soon. You can get your tweets coming in now at FUBAR Radio, or hit us up on the FUBAR Facebook and let us know what's been taking the piss for you this week, and we'll get into that.
I'll tell you what, having a molar ripped out of your mouth is taking a piss.
Did you get to keep it?
No.
Would you want to keep it?
No, it was rotten. Oh, rotten to the core.
Stink. See, it's all those fizzy drinks and sweets.
Hey, a very, very important day for everyone in the UK and also a lot of people around the world as well. It's 10 years ago today that the 7/7 bombings, terrorist attack in London happened, and just... God, it's just... I remember hearing from it over in Australia.
So you weren't there. You weren't here at that time.
No. But it was just... could only imagine like what the feeling would have been around the city.
Oh, it was nuts. What was really odd for me is that I was riding to work. I was still running my youth club in South Kilburn. And I was riding. I'd just moved to Hackney. And I was riding. Did the rides like 45 minutes or something. Mm. And it was just roadblock all the way. And I just was such a Londoner, I just thought, there's got quite bad traffic today.
Yeah.
Quite bad traffic today. And I got in and the mood was like crazy, like in the office at the club, and everyone had the TVs on. And I was just like, what the hell? Because the same thing had happened in September 11th. Yeah. I was still working in the same place and I remember the same thing, but obviously without the traffic. And it was the same vibe. And I just thought, I had the same feeling. I just thought, oh my God, like, We're at war again. Thankfully, nothing else happened after that. But do you remember the phones? Do you remember the phones? Like, the phones just died.
Locked off, yeah.
Like, you couldn't call anyone. I remember getting a call from Young Gun's wife, the rapper Young Gun.
Mm.
And she phoned me and she was in tears because she couldn't get hold of him. And that's what was happening, like, across the board. People were trying to get hold of their loved ones and couldn't get through. So the next name in the phone book who they could get through to, they'd just call and just say, look, if you speak to so-and-so, please. I know I haven't spoken to you in like 10 years or whatever, but if you speak to so-and-so, please just let me know. Because all the networks, it was crazy. Everything was just jammed. So it was like a proper panic, I think, for all Londoners, because you know what a crowded city this is and how quickly we can get across it. It's easy to think you might know someone in that. I mean, I didn't, but I still to this day, 10 years later, I think about the people that suffered. Do you know what I mean? Because I was just reading an article today about a Muslim woman who died in the bombings and has become a kind of bartering piece for both sides, you know, like Muslim extremism and like UK multiculturalism. I was just saying, fuck both of that. I'm not interested in any of that. It's just another person who was a Londoner, a compatriot of mine that lost their lives, you know. Let's just focus on that. Stop making politics out of everything. So, yeah, I'm interested to hear this piece and see what other Londoners think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's like a bit of a montage we had put together from some of the news coverage of the actual event. And then also I hit the streets, as I said, and chatted to some people about how they felt about it. We'll get into that shortly as well.
Reports are just coming in of an explosion at Liverpool Street Station here in London.
On that old gate, I can confirm a bomb damage to train, one carriage completely wiped out, at least 9 people very seriously injured and trapped, 2 confirmed fatalities.
And then there's this explosion, big white appeared, and then it was just smoke everywhere. In the tunnel, we were trying to close the doors because it was just smoke, we couldn't breathe.
Everyone just asking what's happened. All we're being told is it's a major incident and the whole of the London Underground is now shut.
We're now also hearing that there have been further incidents at Russell Square. Now, British Transport Police are saying that a power surge caused the incidents, some of which caused explosions.
Excuse me, please.
And literally, there was just a very loud bang. The train derailed. There was smoke everywhere. There's a lot of serious injuries down there as well, a lot of serious head injuries.
And she's on the tube somewhere, and she's at Russell Square, but no one's really telling us anything at the moment, so we're just kind of waiting to see what happens. Just the not knowing, the phones are down.
There are two trains stuck in tunnels at Edgware Road, and it's not known if they've collided or whether passengers remain on board.
Everyone thought they were going to die. People started saying prayers, praying to God, panicking, breaking the carriage windows with their bare hands, anything to get oxygen into the carriage.
You started listening to the people shouting on the carriage that blew up, and there was this awful screaming of people like, just help, 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 and it's just indescribable.
We're now hearing reports that a bus has been ripped apart in an explosion in central London.
One man has actually shown myself some footage that he recorded on his mobile phone of a bus exploding a few streets away, just near to Euston Station, people lying on the floor.
All of London's transport is currently disabled or stopped, whether that's buses or trains. So the safest thing that everybody can do is to stay where they are.
There is a suggestion that the explosion on the bus in Tavistock Square was caused by a suicide bomber. If they are confirmed, then that would be the first suicide bomber to have struck in the United Kingdom.
Our determination to defend our values and our way of life is greater than their determination to cause death and destruction to innocent people in a desire to impose extremism on the world.
People walking home, unable to use tubes or buses. But what was striking was the calmness of the crowds on the day that London suffered.
Wow, man, it's just so heavy. So
it
heavy.
Is, I think it obviously it's like a massive tragedy, and it was so shocking for London, because it's we've not really experienced something like that for decades, really. And I also feel that the reality is, you know, these kind of things are happening. I mean, just last week, the Saudis bombed Yemen, innocent people in Yemen, Saudis supported by the British and US governments. And so, you know, these things are still continuing, like whether or not they're British people or whatever, I think that's a tragedy as well. Yeah. Like to see children who can't breathe because their lungs have been burnt by a bomb that was dropped on their house by the Saudi government, who the Prince Charles went to their birthday parties earlier in the year and all this kind of thing. So it's like irrelevant of what nationality you are. We're all in this together, exactly. Wherever you live.
Yeah.
And, you know, 40 people tragically lost, innocent people lost their lives in London that day. And whoever the perpetrators were, these were seriously psychologically disturbed individuals. We have people in powers of position who are making decisions on our behalf, in our name as British people, going around the world, drop it. They don't even have the guts to look in someone's eye and kill them. No, and they're doing the same business, yeah? And then this is further perpetuating and exacerbating situations in other parts of the world where people are like saying, we're not down with this, and the only way that we can vocalise that is by doing crazy things that we're seeing happening in
I agree with pretty much everything that you said. However, I do believe that there are some twisted individuals who are looking for any excuse to create violence and madness, and I don't believe that just our foreign policy is enough for these people to just suddenly turn into murderers. They're psychos.
No, that's what I'm saying. They're just psychologically disturbed people. You know, that's the only person who can carry something like that out.
The only political argument that I'm interested in getting into when it comes to tragedies like this is related to the relationships that I understand. You know, I don't understand the frame of mind of like a crazy twisted dude who claims to be an imam. I don't understand the frame of mind of a prime minister who can sleep at night having, you know, authorized bombing of another country and children dying. But what I can understand is the people that I grew up with in London in the 80s and the 90s into the 2000s. And you know, I grew up in Northwest London. I grew up like all my mates, half my mates were probably Muslims in the 80s, you know, all the way up to modern day, you know. And I can't think of anything more painful for them than when all of this is described as kind of a Muslim tragedy. Do you know what I'm saying? As something that Islam created. It's nothing to do with Islam.
And so you have to think, where does that framing come from? Yeah. You know, that whole dialogue and framing it as that thing is part of a strategy which helps like people carry out some things. But I genuinely feel in terms of any problem in the world, whether that's within your own household or on a country-to-country basis, like global basis, it's about us having compassion and understanding for people as, yeah, you are, I'm trying to relate to you, even though we don't even speak the same language in the same way I'd relate to the person who lives next door to me. As soon as we can deal with each other as human beings, rather than being able to dehumanize and saying, oh, these are crazy, radical, like, Islamic extremists, as soon as you give someone that title, it gives permission for us to, yeah, like, not look 100%. At them as human beings or reasonable, you know, and I'm not justifying that.
Don't you think it's nuts that someone uneducated like me could have an uneducated friend? And I've grown up like raised as an atheist with no faith whatsoever, and I can grow up with a friend who's been brought up a staunch Muslim, and we can get on fine, and I can go to his house and it's all blessed. He can come to my house, it's all blessed. I know what he doesn't eat, he knows I eat whatever the fuck. Do you know what I'm saying?
That's our parents are
both cool with it. How come that's happening at like a grassroots level, and then when we turn on the TV, apparently,
yeah,
like at the upper level, everybody's against each other.
But I see, even when you look at situations on those upper
echelon
levels,
they're lying to us about our differences. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
If we take that down to a microcosm level and put that same situation in a school playground, how would those situations be dealt with, and how would a teacher tell two kids in those situations to deal with it? It wouldn't be about, oh, you must do this and orders and you know, creating difference, disparity.
We'll find a happy medium and we'll get on with it.
You know, so I just think, and London is the testimony of that too. We have such an amazing mix of people in London.
Yeah, and it takes a lot for us to get to a point where we're flipping, throwing bombs at each other. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? You look at the last time, it would have been the battles with the IRA in the 70s and early 80s. And I do actually remember that shit. Do you know what I mean?
Because
I, you know, growing up in Kilburn, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
So for it to happen again, it was very upsetting.
Yeah.
But I think I knew, in the same way a lot of New Yorkers knew, in September the 2011, that like this stuff would not represent the culture that we created as a modern city. Do you know what I'm saying? Like London is a unique place and it's a bubble that annoys Middle England and whatnot a lot of the time, but it just is what it is. It's a place where people come, and if anything, they're divided by their aspirations and their desire for money or whatever. But when it comes down to colour and culture and religion, like, London's is
With the 7-7, though, I feel obviously that was like a major moment, but I don't feel it's a defining moment of London at all. Like, I don't feel as a Londoner that has defined my experience or how I reflect on London.
Not at all. Well, and that's great, because that's what they want, especially when they're going to be in a terrorist attack on things that are so vital to the bloodstream of the city, things like the tube, things like the buses, which people just so rely on. That's what they want to do. They want to instill that fear to try to divide us like that by going, well, I don't feel comfortable and safe to use those things that I so desperately need now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think what was great, because sorry, you go, mate.
No, I was just going to say September the 11th, back then in 01 in New York, possibly was more defining, because to hit American shores was such a foreign concept to a lot of people. Do you know what I'm saying? People will still feel passionately about Pearl Harbor, and the idea of anybody having a go at them, other than, like, even the Civil War would probably be the last time they thought this is where we felt under attack, and it was by fellow Americans. You know, so I think it was a profoundly big deal over there. And I'm not talking about the number of people that died, because to me it's irrelevant whether one person or 3,000 people die. It's a fucking tragedy. Do you know what I'm saying? But I think that for America, it was a very, very profound thing to feel under attack, because they're essentially the biggest guy. They were like the biggest dude in the playground, and all of a sudden they got punched and their nose actually bled. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was that Bruce Lee moment of looking down at the blood, like, what the hell? Mm. Whereas for us, you know, I'm not saying we're au fait with it and we're totally cool with it, but the IRA was not that long ago. Mm. You get me? Like, London's always been a target.
Well, I was curious. I'm going out and chatting to some people this morning, just went and hit the streets and find out how people felt about it, the bombings, and get their opinion on it. This is what went down.
All right, Matthew from London, mate. So it's 10 years today since the 7/7 bombings. Where were you? What do you remember when it all happened 10 years ago?
What do I remember? I was at work. I was packing up and everything, and then I get a phone call, and I got told there's been bombings. I'm like, what do you mean there's been bombings? Yeah, trains been blown up. There's been buses that have been blown up. And my mate was literally around Edgware Road station when it happened. And he's like, yeah, it wasn't a nice thing to even hear.
No, it's absolutely terrifying. How did you feel when you heard all this?
Do you know what? Shocked. Absolutely shocked that somebody can actually do that to themselves and hurt people in the process. And it reminded me about 9/11 when the Twin Towers come down. Yeah. So, yeah, really, really upsetting, distorted, shocked, angry. I don't know. How would anybody feel, really? Yeah. Same.
You've been a Londoner your whole life?
Yeah, I have.
So did it change the way for you that you felt about how, you know, feeling safe in your city or your day-to-day activities? Did it change anything for you since then?
Not really, no. I mean, I've always felt safe within London with everything that goes on within London. But for me, personally, I just think as a Londoner, we get on and just carry on and just go forth. So
amazing. Good on you, man. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Marco from Italy. So you're saying you've lived in London for 4 years. Were you over in Italy when the 7/7 bombings happened 10 years ago?
No.
Whereabouts were you then?
Well, years in Italy and Switzerland. Right. And down here.
And what did you think when you heard? What did you feel? What was going through your mind when you heard what happened?
Tragedy, big tragedy, and a lot of sadness. And I remember it was great sadness. I observed 1 minute of silence this morning.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I was not touched, but we have to think that it's something that can happen even to our lives.
Did it, I mean, obviously such a scary thing to happen. Did it put any fear or doubt in your mind on wanting to move to London permanently?
No, not really. I'm an optimistic, so I have to believe that the human being is improving anyway, so we will have less and less of this kind of accident in the future.
Yeah, hoping so. Do you feel safe generally on a day-to-day basis in London?
Yeah, honestly, yes. Yes.
So the terrorists haven't won. They want to drive fear into our city, and they haven't won.
No, they haven't won. We have to react in this way. It's the only weapon that we really have.
Yeah.
Not be scared, not be feared. Be scared is what they want.
So, Louise from Cornwall, you live in London now, obviously, but you said you were in Cornwall when the terrorist attack happened 10 years ago. What do you remember the feeling and thinking when you heard what happened?
More bullshit. Sorry, yeah, more bullshit, really. I don't really remember it that well. But yeah, you never know what to believe anyway with this stuff.
Yeah.
You never know what to believe. You don't know actually who it is and what it is and who's behind it or anything. So I'm pretty sceptical of the news and of, yeah.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, because you actually don't know. You only know what the media tells us.
Yeah.
When things like this happen, we put it in the box of it's Muslim extremists or it's ISIS,
yeah,
or something like that. But
yeah,
we don't even know that sometimes. I mean, obviously
could
when they
be our own government, you don't know. Could be, yeah.
How does it make you feel on a sort of day-to-day basis living in London when something like
I'm
this
just
happens?
About to move, literally, because I'm fed up of it.
Yeah.
Not because I'm scared of some kind of attack, but just because of the general lack of soul and, like, lack of... and too much hostility, numbness, stagnation, like, collection of negative energy in a city that doesn't move out. It just gets trapped in the underground where I'm going now. Like, you can feel it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm moving back to the West Country where I'm from.
Well, obviously, one of the bombs being on the tube 10 years ago. Mm. Do you ever have any trepidation or hesitation wanting to get the tube?
Yeah, I had it a few weeks ago, actually, because I know through doing a bit of work in the kind of inside sections of some of the underground stations, tutoring some of the employees. I know about the, they have like a secret message or a code message for when that a terrorist thing happens or some kind of emergency, and they, it's so they don't panic people, it says something different. And yeah, it was, that message was going off the other day at King's Cross.
What's the message?
It's like, can Inspector someone please come to the ticket hall? It's something really like random, but it's normal, but it's not normal. And I heard it and I was like, fuck, I was really scared. And I ran out of the tube to get out, even though I wasn't supposed to get off at King's Cross. I was supposed to keep going. I just, because it was really scary. And maybe they're practicing. Because it was fine, but it just goes on for a long time and keeps saying the same message over and over again.
Wow, so really I'd never even heard of that before.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd
so if anything happens, if something happens, they're not going to say it.
Yeah.
They're going to say like a code, like message like that, so that all the staff know, but it doesn't alert people and get people panicking and running.
Yeah.
Like I did.
Oh god, it's still terrifying though.
Yeah, yeah. It's scary.
Would you say though, because obviously the big thing for when terrorists do want to attack, you know, a western city or something like that, they want to instill fear that it could happen anytime, any place. You're never going to know how they're going to strike. Did that fear after an attack like this, did that get embedded into you somehow, or did you?
Yeah, it embeds fear, doesn't it? It embeds fear, of course. Yeah.
You just get along with it anyway.
We have to, don't you? What can you do? But I definitely, that's definitely a part of why I'm leaving, because I just don't know what to believe in terms of all of that. And yeah, it does instill fear and it instills negativity and all of that. And yeah, maybe some of it is granted, but then at the same time, what can we actually do about it? What's the point in instilling this fear? What can we do? Like it says about keeping vigilant or reporting, you know, these stupid messages on the tube and stuff saying be vigilant, report anything suspicious. Well, who are we going to report it to? And if it was a bomb, like it's always going to go off, isn't it? Like reporting it's not going to help.
Yeah.
So I think it's all a load of bollocks and it's already pointless, all of the kind of, yeah, instilling the fear, like, or instilling the vigilance. Like, what for? Like, we can't do anything to be vigilant. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
There you go. Bit of the bit of mixed opinions on the streets.
Yeah, it's impressive. I feel exactly what she was saying. The only thing I disagree with her on is, but it's not. It's just a life decision, really. Like, some of us are, like, born Londoners. Like, where are we going to go?
Yeah.
Like, where am I going to go? Mm. Like, there's times when you wake up in the city, like, with the riots or so-called riots, you know, the bombings, you know, you hear about stabbings, violence, you know, selfishness, whatnot, and you think, you know what, I got to get out of here, especially when you got kids. But where the hell am I going to go? You know what I'm saying? My wife's a Londoner, born and bred. Our parents are Londoners. Our kids are Londoners.
Yeah.
Like, this woman's from the West Country. She's going to go back to the West Country, you know, bully for her. But, like, I think for some of us, it's like we still have a thing where we want to make this place work, not just for us, but for our communities, you know, and to try and bring back the essence of a London community. And I've always been on that, like, my whole life. I've been trying to be a part of that. And it's not easy, but I think, like, when you display it, people really buy into it. Like, on Sunday, I was at the Alma Street Fair in Kentish Town. It's like a street festival, old school street festival, where you apply to the council and close down the street and you just have a party. And it was just, I mean, it's always lovely, but it was just lovely again, you know, and, like, the trendies and the nouveau riche, they haven't quite clocked onto it yet. So it's still that old school NW5, all the families from the houses setting up the stalls, you know, and you know, occasionally they might be able to get a celebrity to come and say a few words or a musician to come and play a gig. Like last year we had that Mr. Hudson who was living nearby. But on the whole, it's just, you know, your old school stalls, some ice cream, do you know what I'm saying? Like, some of the local businesses have got a little stall version of whatever they sell. And it was just lovely. And London can still do it. We can still do it. Mm. But it takes, I don't know, maybe it takes a real Londoner, or maybe it takes somebody who actually truly loves this city to just say, you know what, let's get back to the essence of what this shit is about. Community, having a good time, togetherness. Not based on anything other than the fact that we all live crammed together on this little street. you know.
Yeah. Well, it's like with the Boston bombings as well.
Yeah,
you know, the marathon,
it really
worked.
You know,
people all still came together after that to just show their defiance of no, we are not going to be, you know, put under the bracket of this fear. We're not going to live our lives like that. But on behalf of everyone here at FUBAR, we want to send our love and thoughts to everybody that was affected by that, especially friends and family that were affected by the 7/7 bombing 10 years ago today.
Yeah, 100%.
We've got some feedback coming through from you guys about the wireless festival discussion before we get into that next. You're on FUBAR.
Sarah Hugh and Doc 2 on FUBAR Radio.
You gotta stop talking.
Oh, sorry.
No, we don't have to stop talking. Right. People don't mind hearing
Schooly
us talk.
Schooly D, living in the jungle. You're on FUBAR. It's Sarah Hugh
Schooly.
And Doc 2.
Schooly.
We were chatting about Wireless Festival before. Obviously, a lot of people were, about 100 people or so, Sarah, all kicked down.
Oh,
kicked
I
down
don't
gate,
know what the actual
through,
numbers
like
are, but just looking
it was
at the
100
clip
young
from
men, 100 all young dressed men. In black,
yeah.
behaving very aggressively.
Yeah,
and I just
chanting
don't.
Grime
that's
lyrics.
Not what I wanted to see in Finsbury Park at that time.
And not at a concert, music concert. A few tweets coming in at FUBAR Radio. Hayley from Essex. She says, "I think it was bad. People have paid to get into that festival and to enjoy it, and then people think they can just barge in like that. I think it's really disappointing. I'd be pissed off if I was around them lot." That's her opinion.
Well, what would you do though?
What are you gonna do though, Bam?
No, I feel her. You know, on a slightly more legal but just as irritating level. Yeah. When you go and see a show at a festival, and there's other people who are at the festival, yeah. If you've gone there because you're a big fan of the band, and you're there, you got your little spot. Isn't it a bit of a piss take when some prick comes like 5 minutes into the show? And wants to barge past you and stand in front of you.
Yeah.
Like, if you've been there for an hour, that's mad selfish. Like, that is mad selfish. Yeah. I don't think people really think about it. Just like, oh, some aggressive guys, they better let them stand in front. No. That is a piss take. There's some super fans in here who've been here for like 2 hours before the band even come on stage.
Yeah. I mean, I've jumped over a fence and I had to push down with a bunch of people at a festival years and years ago. Well, I did because I had bought a ticket that someone had sold me a cheap ticket, right? Like a friend of a friend of a friend. So it was about, I think about 7 or 8 of us have all bought tickets. Still quite expensive, but cheaper. Get to the gate and they're like, no, these are all fucking fake, man. These are all fake tickets.
Oh,
and we were like,
shit.
Fuck, man. It was sold out. We didn't know what to do. So we just kind of lurking around.
Yeah.
No, we were just kind of lurking around and then we just picked the time when we saw, you know, the couple of the guards were not in that one particular spot.
And I think
it's about 40 or 50 people just ran and jumped at the gate. Mm. The security guards sort of standing there like trying to catch one or two.
Yeah, a couple you're going to get picked off.
But that's about it, yeah.
But if it's not America, then you'll be getting sniped out.
Yeah,
that's true. Only do that shit where there's no guns.
Also, Tessa from Lewisham, she tweeted us as well, saying, "Hey,
Lewisham.
I was kind
of Lewisham. That's a new. I've never
read the email. We'll take the piss out of you afterwards.
No. Tell me now.
Never imagine
Lewisham
being pronounced like that.
It's Lewisham.
Lewisham.
Yeah.
Ah,
but the way you said it, Lewisham, it sounded magical.
But you know what? The same thing can happen with English people trying to pronounce the names of like Native America, Native Australian places.
Yeah.
So where we'll just make a
mockery of these names.
Well, I'm glad to try to make it sound magical for you guys.
You just call it a Kazwaza, something like that. It's probably real.
Tessa said, she said, "I was kind of vexed when I saw those people breaking in at Wireless, but only because I wish I'd done it to see my man Drake."
I was going to say, I didn't even feel vexed about them doing it.
And she says, "I just sat at home and thought about his beautiful face instead. Childish Gambino. Okay. He'd bloody get it as well. Get it as well."
Wow, this is really sexually aggressive email.
It was very weird.
I think someone from the FUBAR office might have sent that last email.
Sarah's been inspiring the girl, our female listeners.
Yeah.
So rise up!
Get sexually aggressive while you're listening to Hugh Joseph in the afternoon.
Also, David in Stockwell, he tweeted us saying, "Yo, these people who broke into Finns Park are absolute chiefs. If you can't pay for a ticket, you ain't got no business witness the majesty of Mary J. You can have Minaj though."
So what's the difference?
Minaj you can have for
but
free.
So what's the difference between like bum rush? I mean, I wouldn't break in like that. But what's the difference between that and then people who are just like blagging a free ticket because they happen to know someone and getting in like that? What's the difference?
It's totally different.
Why?
It's totally different. Because like, I think if you're blagging one, then you know somebody who earned that ticket in some way from working in the industry, and then they've decided to give you one. Yeah. And you're gonna treat the festival hopefully with respect when you're in there. If you're coming with no ticket whatsoever, no assurance, but if you come with no ticket whatsoever and you're just going to barge it down, that's the whole thing, because you're putting people, you're pushing people into a feeling of fear.
But this is what I'm saying, I don't even put it down to the people's fault, it's the organisers.
At the same time, I think I already made my position clear at the start of the show. I feel like these things cost too much. If you make money out of the streets, you should respect the street as well.
They and don't have give discounted a damn tickets. About the streets.
What I would do if I was an organiser, I would say if you can prove that you live in M5, or you can prove that you live like within the local area, there's a discount for you. So if you bring like a proof of ID or whatnot, you can get a discounted ticket as a Londoner who lives in that area.
There's so much stuff like that can be done, and there's no interest from the people who sponsor wireless to do any of that. They don't give a damn about these people. They're interested in milking you for as much money as they can get. I used to run a hip-hop event in London called Kung Fu that was pretty damn sick. Yes. And those were some legendary times held right there. And, you know, we had a policy, even though when we grew to being doing like 2,000 people events, we had a policy where every event was £5 because that was our principle.
Even when we had some superstars in there, it was still £5.
That was a principle that we had. Don't expect no principle from corporations.
I'm the same with my comedy shows now. Like, I want it to be £10 max because, like, you know, they try and put you on in Edinburgh and stuff for like £16, £17. Like, who's going to come and see me for that much? I wouldn't see me for that much. That's insane. You know, like, every artist wants a packed room more than they want the absolute spoils. And I'm talking about real artists.
And that's worth more sometimes than a fee that you can be paid.
Like, sometimes I come off tour and I think, you know what, I was performing at a reduced rate or whatever. And then I get a paycheck like 6 months later. I forgot I was getting paid because I did the whole tour and it was so much fun and people was laughing every night. And then I get paid as well. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So if you're going to like give me that paycheck at the end of a tour 6 months later, or I've got a choice between that and a paycheck that's like maybe £3,000 more, like really and truly, it's short-sighted to just say, fuck my fans.
Yeah,
I want £3,000 more. Mm. Do you know what I'm saying? But that, you know, that's the nature of the beast, unfortunately. I just think with the wireless thing,
the
organisers need to respect the fact that they're promoting a music that is from the streets. It is born of the working classes. Therefore, the real fans of it may not be able to afford to come based on those ticket prices. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And the real shame is that the same people who said, oh, I saw Kanye at the Brits and there was lots of black people in black clothes and they looked very aggressive. Those people are going to get freaked out by wireless because I think, oh, this is those rap guys doing that rap thing again. Mm. But it's not, because the difference is if you've got a Bon Jovi playing and a bunch of artists supporting Bon Jovi who are of that same ilk, it's very unlikely that they're going to be speaking.
It's very unlikely. Sorry,
I don't want to be a prick, but it's very unlikely that they're going to be speaking to like the kids that are grown up on the council estates, no money, from backgrounds where their parents aren't working and they've got no income. It's very unlikely that they're going to make up the majority of, you know, like you say, Bryan Adams or Bon Jovi. Therefore, all of a sudden, that festival is going to get a lot more like positive press than the wireless festival, and that's the thing that irritates me the most. I'm not going to justify pushing the fences down.
No, I don't,
because
I think that's scary.
Yeah, and if I was there,
I was worried for their safety. Yeah. Like the people, they could have easily been trampled if one of them people tripped up, and then the next 100 people are just storming over them. Yeah. But I do not blame the kids, and I'm not going to shame them kids for doing that, because of course they're thinking, I'm going to get to see Drake for free. They're not thinking deeper than that.
Of course, that's the organizers
being slack with their perimeter and their security situation, that they are the ones who put people at risk that day.
And if you were a security guard there, you know, you're not getting paid that much anyway. You see 100 young people running towards you, mate, go for it, mate.
You know what I'm saying?
That's exactly what you're doing.
I'm going to have a cigarette and a beer, mate. I got in trouble working for Next
because I didn't intercept these two guys that lifted up a rail with suits on it. They lifted the whole rail up and dust out, pushing people out of the way.
I got
in trouble for not intercepting. I was like, listen, anybody who's got the balls to pick up a rail of suits
yep.
clearly on steroids.
Are you nuts? Like, I'm going to die for Next. Like, I don't want to die for anything.
No, like, that's exactly
but if
what
I had to choose my cause, I'm telling you, next is not in the top 10.
It's not there. Not having it, mate.
Hey, we're going to get into Are You Taking the Piss Up next? And then we've got Lewis Parker is going to be joining us for the last half hour.
Lewis Parker's timing is taking the piss.
It's taking the piss. Just stole my Are You Taking the Piss?
We've already got a stat coming through. You can tweet us at FUBAR Radio. Or
he's got four, so don't worry.
FUBAR Radio on Facebook as well. Yeah, man, I really have tons and tons and tons. But here we go. This one going out to the kids that smashed down the fence at Wireless. Yeah. Sometimes you just got to fight for your rights. You're on FUBAR.
You got to fight.
You got to. You just got to. Beastie Boys. And it's sad. We're just saying during that song as well. It's so sad. No more Beastie Boys in there.
I know,
travesty.
Man.
Absolute travesty.
He was the only one I met, you know, at MCA. I met him. I went to New York for the first time in 1995. Mm. And I was wandering around. And I was a huge Beastie Boys fan, you know, and that. They just dropped the Ill Communication album the previous summer. And I went into Greenwich Village for the first time and I just bumped into him. Walked straight into him. Wow. And he was lovely, as you can imagine. Mm. You know, being a Buddhist and whatnot.
Yeah, no, cool guys.
Tried to kick him in the shins, test that shit out. He was totally
tried your
cool.
Michael Flatley moves on him.
Yeah. Great. Nah, RIP MCA, because that was such a great group, man. Yeah.
Oh, they're one of the greatest who have ever done it.
I remember, absolutely. Do you remember the first time you heard that Eminem tune where he was like... I melt vanilla ice like silicone. You remember that lyric where he's just laying into all the white rappers? You remember that? Off the first album, you don't remember that?
You need to hear it again.
What did he say
about Beastie Boys?
Well, this is the thing. I remember the first time I heard it and I was listening to it, he was dissing every white rapper and I thought, oh man, please don't diss the Beastie Boys. Yeah. That's not fair.
Did he hold back?
He just didn't do it. He didn't do it. And then I saw an interview with him and he was just like, they were one of the biggest influences because they were the only white guys who were just like, yeah, we're white, like, whatever.
But they fully had the respect of everyone.
We're just white and we love rap.
Talking about white rappers, they have to big up Third Base, though, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
there's plenty of people, young black teenagers, Third Base. But
Third Base did it right.
Right now,
he went easy on Pete Nice. That reminded me how the lyric goes. It starts with Pete Nice. He goes, I'm nicer than Pete. But I'm on a mission to crush a milkman.
Never was an M fan. But
hey,
that's not
so we do have a mystery voice in the studio right now. So we have been alluring to someone, a very, very prominent, prevalent UK producer joining us in the studio, Lewis Parker. We do have a mystery voice in the studio with us right
now.
Yes,
we do.
Lewis Parker, welcome to FUBAR.
Lewis Parker.
How you doing, people? Respect.
Speaking of New York, you're just fresh back from, you were living in New York for a few years.
Yeah, 13 years. You know, of my life.
That you,
know
you were there for 13 years?
Yes.
Yeah, we lost. It was a tragedy when he left, you know.
Goodness.
Because like, he was.
He left a gap in things.
Arguably,
man.
At that point, he was one of the most important artists that we had at that point.
Well,
the
man with the golden sound. I think, you know, for me, my impact was very heavy in 97, 98, 99.
Yeah, man.
When I first came out, you know, my first releases kind of changed the perspective of the scene over here in many different ways, and it gave a lot of people rockets in their back to do what they were doing. I'm not even going to name names, but it is what it is, you know
don't
what I mean?
Start naming names.
Oh, we don't even have to do that. But people who know what it is, you know what I'm saying? Because I kind of changed the sound and I brought a style to UK rap and to hip hop in general, which hadn't quite been there. You know, when I first came out, it was very obvious. The New York influence, the especially the Beatminders, Black Moon influences in my music, and I kind of had a twist on hip hop which no one quite had over here at that point.
Lewis,
you know
when did you start making music?
When I was 10.
Doing what?
Doing tape loops.
Yeah.
on my brother's.
Well, you played drums as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I also played drums, yes.
A musical family too. Mom.
Yes, oh, you've done a bit of research.
And Dad's a DJ.
He's been on Wikipedia.
DJ.
No, but also, Lewis, because I got so lucky a couple weeks ago, because you'd literally only just been back in the UK for like 2 weeks or something, and then I came to see your show. You know what? I stood up Diamond D to come and watch your live show. That's how much of a fan I am of Lewis Parker.
I stood up Diamond D. I went to Diamond D and they wouldn't let us in the door.
No, but that's... I mean, he's an OG and a lovely lovely guy and everything. What was that about? This is how important it was for me to catch your show. And when I was able to hear those tunes after not hearing some of them for so long, it was seriously nostalgic because it was like going through the family photo album.
Did he do anything from Masquerades and Silhouettes?
Yes, I did, didn't I? And from It's All Happening Now.
Yes, I did. You know, I pretty much did something.
And you brought your sister on stage.
Yes, I brought my sister on stage. I think I tried to do a record off of pretty much all the main solo releases I've ever had. Nice. So, and that's what I'm trying to do on my showcases at the moment, is literally go back through time, you know.
You had your DJ playing from the instrumentals from the vinyl.
Yeah, we only do pure vinyl sets. There's no Serato, no CDs going on. Mm-hmm. I've got nothing against it, but you know, we just keeping it very traditional.
When I was 18,
you can say if you've got something against
when I was 18, all I did really. I used to just get high and listen to 101 Pianos.
Wow.
When I was 18. Head nod shit.
Yeah, before I even tried to rap or anything, I just kick back and listen to that. Wow. And for me, it was the most professional. Like, I'd heard a few bits of English rap.
I really appreciate what you're saying there.
Masquerades and Silhouettes, that for me was the most professional sounding British rap album that I'd ever heard.
I think it was a milestone.
That I'd ever heard. And obviously, I was educated after that, and people played me more stuff that I was too young at the time, you know, London Posse and whatnot.
You know,
shout out Rodney P and all of that. But for me, I think, don't you think, Lewis, rap is a lot of it's about your age at the time when you discover it?
Yes, it is, you know what I'm saying? And that the youth
had a real effect on me.
Capture the essence of what it is at that moment in time. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
But so, I think also just sonically too, we had that whole Nutriment era and Hijack and everyone. And then you had London Posse and everything, which were all those were significant for their own reasons. Yeah. Then things went to another stage in hip hop in this country. And
it was one of the changing sounds. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I tried to say.
After I came out, I was sampling easy listening records and, semi-pop classical records. That was that's the original Lewis Parker sound, you know what I'm saying? Mm. That sound with the piano, strings, and orchestration. Mm. That was what I was bringing to the table, which wasn't really in any kind of way up front. In hip-hop, there was a few cats who had bits and bobs, but when you heard a Lewis Parker record,
listening to a Lewis Parker record.
You knew that
is the essence of being hip-hop, is and you have your that own identity. Is
when I say I kind of changed direction of, that's what I mean, because that wasn't an upfront thing. And you look 5 years later down from, 95, 96, when I first came out with B-Boy Antics and Rise and Masquerades in 97. You look at what happened past that point, and the rap that was coming out, the hip-hop that was coming out of this country started to sound a lot more like my production.
I would say,
I think people got a bit
with orchestral sounds and this kind of, and also the content. I think I brought a different idea and ideology to what you can rap about in content. I was rapping about fantasy. I was rapping about Star Wars. Mm. I was rapping about
first 12-inch had you standing in a field of flowers on the cover. You know what I'm saying? It was some new shit.
It was some new shit. I wasn't coming. There was street smarts in the music because, I've lived on the streets the same as anyone, but I've also been to private schools, I've lived in the countryside, I've lived in Canterbury for a long time. So I had many different ideas and a life experiences which was different to a lot of MCs and rap crews that were out at the time.
I think you took it to another level later on, as you became more renowned for your production and your taste in artists. Well, because I think there's a lot of people who thought
For me, it was like I started off as an MC when I was, as I say, when I was 10, the first thing I was doing was trying to, recite Ice-T and Run DMC's and my favorite rappers' rhymes at the time and trying to make my own versions of that. You know what I mean? So,
I just want
what it was for me is I when I was young I didn't have someone down the street who was making beats at that time. It was something that I wanted to make my hip hop for myself, because that's all I did was be in my bedroom listening to rap
but
tapes.
Really, I think that's what's been like your most, like, that's what's formed you as one of these cornerstone names in hip hop in this country. Like, I'd say it's fair to say, like, Masquerades and Silhouettes, that goes down as a classic UK release, like, in my opinion.
Hope, yeah,
you know, and then it's like, so you've gone from them being a solo artist in your own right to then it's like you moved, you were doing stuff with people like Champions of Nature, which for me, that was such a cool collective of people.
And it's a shame what happened with Champions.
It is a shame. And I have to tell you that, you know, there's a song that Sunshine Anderson that always reminds me of a Champions of Nature tune, which I've even done the mix. Anyway, but so going from having these like classic solo releases to the different collaborations. And then another later important part of your contribution, I feel, in this country was when Kalashnikov came out.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of people, you know, that was again like a big transition. Like in terms of the hip hop scene, and it was like this new name that we had heard and everything. So I thought, seeing as we're running low on time, we definitely need to like play something. We're running out of time though, so let's drop some of that Dago Mentality.
Yeah, go ahead, drop
let's
it.
Hit the play
go.
On that track.
You're on Fubar, and we'll come back with Lewis Parker in the studio as well. Definitely
this,
one of my favorite.
This was made in 1999, came out in 2000.
No, it came out. It was.
It's not a joke. Original front teeth, gold teeth, the brush teeth, skin teeth, kick out teeth.
You're on Fubar. Sarah Hugh and Doc 2, Kalash there, Dago Mentality, as produced by Lewis Parker, who's joining us in the studio right now.
Yes, sir, Hugh.
How did that hookup come about?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Respect to my man A-Side, you know what I'm saying?
I do remember the story.
A-Side and Clash were running together for years. You know, me and A-Side had been running together since, you know, 96 or whatever.
Incognito.
Yeah, around them times. We had met through Mark B., I think the first time I met A-Side was a Mark B session, which actually is on vinyl, the freestyle over the Vadim
beat. Right,
a Mark B beat, but it came out under Vadim.
Mm-hmm.
That freestyle was the first time me and A-Side ever met that session.
One of the true big characters of rap from those days, A-Side,
yeah,
I would
A-Side,
say.
He is an unspoken hero, really, a lot in UK hip-hop. He connected a lot of dots. He did a lot of background work.
He was that guy,
and
man.
He was nice on the mic.
But, yeah, he put you and Clash together.
I was around A-Side, heard Clash freestyling around A-Side's. It's like, yo, dude's crazy nice. You know what I mean? We was down when Vibe Bar was kicking off. I think that was the second time I met Kalashnikov. And I said to him, yeah, we have to do something, Bless.
Did you record that at your studio?
That was in my in the Whitechapel studio. Yeah. Happy Skies.
The legendary Whitechapel.
1999, we did that. End of 99, Dago Mentality came out. And I think Clash has told this story a lot of times. But yeah, he come to the studio brassic, he had £1 in his pocket, like hadn't eaten for the day type flex, you know what I mean? And I had the beat running, and there's certain records, and that was a record when we put it down, I felt the vibe in the session, and I knew it was going to be a record that's going to be a little bit of a game changer, regardless if it super blows or it is underground or whatever. It was one of them records that you knew, people is going to like this one. This is going to make
But that wasn't
noise.
The only tune you did together. You did Zero. He's done some tracks on yours, isn't it?
We did a lot of tracks, you know. Really, me and Kalashnikov, it never transpired how it should have done, you know. You know, like the original Murder record was actually my record. I recorded Murder originally over one of my beats.
Really?
Yeah, they took...
Wow.
Then I had a falling out with Kemet. Kemet was like, we're not using Lewis to do the Murder. And they went to Harry.
And then that became a classic in its own right.
Yeah,
so you see, sometimes things work out perfectly,
this is why
the tunes with you and Kalashnikov are so golden, because it's like gold dust.
People don't even know I've got a good seven more Kalashnikov records from them days on reels. You know,
if only you turned up earlier, Lewis, to the show today, could have gotten through all of that.
I've heard him re-spit certain records. I think the Raw Things record I heard.
He just took the lyric and put it on something else.
Which Clash, that's the classic thing, Clash. Like, Dago Mentality, let me quickly go back to this record, because that wasn't the first version of this record. I have to big up Cuba the Great. He did the original version of Dago Mentality. And I found out about that years after I recorded the original. But Clash approaches records like a reggae man.
You know what I'm saying? I'm just going to do this again. This is a live beat this time. I'm just going to do it.
So you've been working with a whole bunch of cats in the States since you've been living out there. But what's the story now for Lewis? Like, for Lewis Parker fans, you're just back stepping foot in the UK. What's going to be happening?
Well, first of all, check out the last record I did, MK Ultra, with my man East Coast. From Harlem, you know what I'm saying? That's the latest project that's out on streets right now. Came out earlier on in the year. Very, very proud of that album, you know what I'm saying? MK Ultra, Operation Hypnosis. Check that out.
For a second, when you said MK Ultra, I thought Universal Soldiers. I was like, what? Universal Soldiers? No. But yeah, that's another dope UK group.
I did do a track with Ricochet. You know, they actually came through the studio a lot.
They were great,
and
man.
I mixed a few of their records that came out. I was the engineer for their session. But right now, I'm back in the UK. Been back here for a good 5 months now. Just finished building my studio in my garage. I'm living with my two brothers. You know what I'm saying? I'm feeling really excited to be back. You know, for every now and then, it's like, damn, Lewis, what you really moved back to London? Like, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, we thought we lost you.
You know what I mean?
I tell you when we thought we genuinely lost you forever. Especially in the hood, was when Fish Girl came out.
Yeah.
I don't even know who it was. I think it might have been Reveal who said to me, you remember Reveal?
Yeah, I remember Reveal.
I think it was him who said to me, bruv, track one, that flipping Shaky Dog, have you heard that? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, it's a little story with him and Ray. And he goes, bruv, you looked at the producer? I looked it up and I was like, rah, someone's teeth are like Lewis's name. There's like a dude producing under Lewis. And he's like, no, that's Lewis. Like, he's moved to New York. Like, he's doing big things.
Oh,
and it was like a day of celebration and a day of mourning as well. Day of mourning, because we thought, oh yeah, he's gone now.
Well, the thing is, I'm never
How did
gone.
That hookup come about with Ghostface?
Actually, the thing is with Ghostface, that hookup happened when I was over here. I was coming back a lot and forth over here doing shows. My main thing for the good first half of me being in the States was literally trying to walk around with CDs on me, with beat CDs, which wasn't a really thing I was doing in the 90s. I wasn't trying to shop my beats to artists in the 90s. If you wanted a Lewis Parker track, you had to know me, come to me, and blaze me out, and you know what I mean? I might make a beat for you. Yeah. That's how it was back in the days. But doing the American thing, it was like, all right, headspace change. Business Lou, you know what I mean? Let's get this thing popping, you know what I mean? So I'm walking around parties, wherever it was, and this happened to me when I was back in the UK. My man, Savage Ballet, said, Ghost is going to be a Deal Real. You need to go down there and bust one of your CDs to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So that's what we did. Went down Deal Real. He done a little showcase. I hit him with a CD. Didn't think nothing of it because I was hitting mad cats with CDs.
I never knew it started.
You know what I'm saying? A year later, I'm in Barbados with my mum walking down Bridgetown. my phone ringing. It's Ghostface. His manager puts me on the phone with Ghostface, and he's telling me, yo, I love that 70s style, kid. You got the L soundtracks and all this. You know what I'm saying? So, and it went.
That's nuts.
God damn.
It went from there. You know what I'm saying?
That was one of my favorite records on that album.
I got to say, I had 7 records recorded with Ghost at one point. You know what I'm
saying?
That's
cool. We can talk about that after and release it ourselves crazy. On the nail. You know?
And it was a scary point, because leading up to the release of the album, it was every week or so, I was getting the call, we're not using this record, we're replacing it with a Just Plays track. We're using the Pete Rock track. I'm like,
dude, he opened the album. That was your tune.
Shaky Dog was the last record recorded for that album. You know what I'm saying?
We were all cheering you at home.
I love that album.
Thank you.
It's probably the last Ghostface album that I really, really love.
It's true. Wow. And
it starts with a Lewis Parker beat. That's crazy. That's perfection.
But then tell me again, so with Champions of Nature, going back to other people that you've worked with, how did Champions of Nature come together? Like, how did that combination of people end up falling the crew?
Was basically a group of friends, which kind of started with, you know, me and Super T. I'd obviously been doing stuff since, you know, pretty early on in my career. Lasala Dolo, beat maker, who was the main producer of Champions.
Yeah.
You know, we was all living in Camberwell at this point. So Apollo and Profound were all from them ends. And those were the MCs that Dolo was working with at that
Profound. Point. Was he the one who had that tune, Fake MCs, You Better Move From Me?
Yes, that was Profound.
Oh, shit.
you know, South London, Bray, you know, Elephant and Castle. Still remember, trying to remember the things of here. But yeah, Elephant and Castle, Bray, you know what I'm saying? You know, that brother, I still got a lot of love for that brother. I haven't seen him for many, many years, you know what I'm saying? But at one point, we were really super tight, you know. So it was, that was in Camberwell. This is, we talking 96, 97, 98. And when Easter Island, this is when we was first working with Low Life. We did, you know, we did the 98 series, which was the move from me.
That
move from me was like, we stepped Low Life up to the next, to the next level. With the records we were doing, he had done Future Years and some Brain Tax releases at that point, and it was very, Low Life was very under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
But my name was bigger than Brain Tax and Low Life.
You was the star of that label at that point. There's no question about it.
At that point, you know, so we, when we did Easter Island, at that point it was the pinnacle for Low Life at that point in 99. At the same time, Joseph Braintax was working with Task Force, which he didn't tell us about. I don't know why he didn't want to tell us about it, but he didn't tell us about it.
Because he's a snake. Sorry.
Yes.
Well. Wow. Okay. Let's move so swiftly over that.
So, basically, after we all fell out with Braintax, which I'm not even going to go into, it was like we said, we're going to do a record, you know what I'm saying, that's basically saying fuck you to Brain Tax. I'm sorry to swear on daytime radio.
No, wow.
But, but that was what it was about. That's why the record came out as the fuck off song, which was
real snaky.
Yes.
You know?
And he was real snaky around that point. But we wasn't actually officially formed as Champions of Nature.
That was still much later.
It was still a conglomerate of friends who were just happened to be doing music together, and we said, let's put some records out. So that was the fuck off song was the first record, which was Champions of Nature, but we hadn't said it. I said it in one of my verses. I can't remember the line, but I said Champions of Nature, and it was an idea that I had in my head for a name of a crew, which I thought was cool. Mm. It actually came from watching David Attenborough documentaries, and he had Champions of Nature, and then he had Champions of the Future, and that Champions of the Future, still watch out because I might form Champions.
Hey guys, we got to jump into a song. We've only literally.
We've got a few minutes left. We still got to do our taking the pieces. We can run straight into it.
Sarah, stop causing trouble.
But I want to hear another tune as well.
Come on, give us a song.
All right, come on. This is Incognito. You want to tell us about this one, Lewis?
This record came out in 2002 off my All Happening Now album.
Yeah.
This was a kind of change in my sound when I was. This was one of my early SP. When I was really confident on the SP coming out, you know, all of my 90s stuff was done on Atari ST with Akai S900s.
Yeah.
So that switched up your sound.
It switched up my sound, you know. So this was one of the first records that on the SP I felt really confident with, like, yeah, I'm in control of my game.
Do you use the SP 12 or 1200?
Let's get into it. This was on the
12 and 900.
Here we go. This is Lewis Park now. We'll be back with the man in the studio. You're on FUBAR. How dope is that? Lewis Parker there, Incognito, the name of that one. We're lucky enough to be joined by the main man himself in the studio. Sir. You're on FUBAR, Sarah Hugh and Doc 2. Now it's time.
Are you taking the piss?
Just about time. So we've got like 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're going to smash through this pretty quick. But this is where we give
now.
You.
I can rap if I wanted to.
This is where we give you an opportunity each week to vent what's been taking the piss for you. You can tweet us anytime at FUBAR Radio. And what's been taking the piss for you guys? Who wants to kick it off?
Taking the piss for me was probably at the Mary J. Blige concert. She was just absolutely killing it. And it was like, oh my God, this woman is phenomenal. And then she was like, everyone put your ones up. And then she went into the U2, one love, one love. And it was kind of like, okay, Mary, I love you and everything. And this is the only circumstance I will tolerate, like supporting U2 like this is you singing it. But it was kind of like, I don't want to hear U2 right now.
Yeah, I'm still angry about them forcing their album onto my iTunes.
I used that. That's still taking the piss. to this day. When Michael was here, I said I used that on Taking the Piss. I was like, dude, that's a liberty.
That's a rape.
Here's a few from you guys. Here's Sophia from Bexley. She's tweeted us, this tube strike is pissing me off. It's going to be a pain in the ass getting to work Thursday morning. The journey's already stressful enough.
Are you taking the piss?
Get a bite.
Definitely taking the piss. Aaron from Havering. Am I saying that right? Probably not. Havering?
No,
Havering. It's hot weather. It's making my feet very smelly. It makes me paranoid in the office. Feet, you are taking the piss.
Are you taking the piss?
Definitely are. Here we go. We've got Simon and Battersea. Fuck the tube strike and fuck TFL. You are all taking the piss out of London.
Are you taking the piss?
And Paul from Hams tweeted us, my hair is dirty every day because of this hot, stinky and sweaty weather. Shampoo, it ain't cheap, you know.
Are you taking the piss?
It is cheap.
Yeah, I've got one. This is my new flatmate. I just moved into a new house in Bow.
From the pound shop.
Just moved into a new house in Bow on Saturday. And my flatmate was there. She was waiting there. And she ordered a furniture set from Argos or something. They said it's going to turn up. Argos. Between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. it's going to turn up all day. She had to wait there for 12 hours.
Yeah,
turned up at fucking 5 to 7. 5 to 7 p.m.
Are you taking the piss?
Lewis Parker, do you want to take us out? We've got 30 seconds left. What's been taking the piss for you, mate?
The fact that I'm still not a multi-millionaire. That's taking the fucking piss.
Let's make it happen, guys.
Yeah.
Buy Lewis Parker's back catalogue.
Are you taking the piss?
Go fund Lewis Parker to become a millionaire.
We've got to get out of here. We've got to get out of here, but thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next Tuesday.
Thanks,
Sarah Hugh and Doc 2. Catch the go and catch the podcast as well on the website. And Lewis Parker, thank you.
Peace.
Sarah Hugh and Doc 2 on FIBA Radio.